Welcome to Eastern Standard, produced for WEKU by Dynamics Productions, with support from the Foundation for Appalachian Kentucky and the Appalachian Impact Fund, working together to promote community collaboration, economic development, and education by increasing charitable giving and philanthropic investments across communities in southeastern Kentucky. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for joining us. This edition begins a two-part series of Eastern Standard devoted to the challenges of keeping roofs over the heads of Kentuckians who, through no fault of their own and as a direct consequence of this pandemic, have lost jobs or taken pay cuts. This also has hit hard those who make a living owning and managing residential rental properties. In the latest COVID-19 Relief Act, Congress extended the Centers for Disease Control eviction moratorium through January 31st, and also established a $25 billion fund to help people who have missed rent or utility payments due to the pandemic. This grant money can be used to pay current and past due rent, utilities, home energy costs, and other housing expenses incurred due to COVID-19. The assistance will generally cover up to 12 months of approved costs and expenses. Many landlords have had to continue maintaining and financing their properties with less or even no rent coming in for a long time. Under the new Relief Act, payments go directly to the landlord or utility with a notice of the payment to the tenant. The government will directly pay a tenant if the landlord or utility company refuses to accept payment from the government on the tenant's behalf. The Act prioritizes assistance for households that have income totaling less than half the area median household income, or where an individual within the household has been unemployed for over 90 days. However, any household can request rental assistance under the Act if one or more individuals in the household have qualified for unemployment benefits, experienced a reduction in household income, had other financial hardship due to COVID-19, or can demonstrate a risk of homelessness or housing instability. Any assistance received will not be treated as income and is not to be considered when evaluating eligibility for other state or federal assistance. The Act allows landlords and owners to help renters apply for grant money, and with the tenant's signed permission, a landlord can apply for assistance on behalf of the renter and use any payments received to satisfy the tenant's rental obligations. The Office of the Inspector General is to monitor the program to combat fraud. On December 29th, soon after this latest Relief Act was signed into law, Governor Andy Beshear announced during his daily coronavirus briefing,
"As a part of this new CARES Act that was passed, the CDC eviction moratorium was extended through the end of January. So yesterday I signed an executive order that extends our moratorium on evictions to match the CDC's."
The grants for rental assistance have been given out proportionally to states and local governments. Kentucky received $297 million.
These are dollars we're going to have through a state program with federal funds to help people out on preventing evictions, on making sure you're not in debt because of past rent or future rent, and also your utility expenses. This is a program we're going to really push out broadly across Kentucky because it can help a lot of people, almost $300 million. That should mean $300 million less debt to Kentuckians that are struggling. That ought to mean $300 million worth of keeping people in their home with the light and the water on so that we can defeat this pandemic and emerge ready to sprint out and not stumble because of what we still owe.
What is not known at this moment is what happens after this moratorium expires on January 31st. The pandemic and the need to keep people in their homes will still be with us then. In part one of this two-part series, you'll hear the perspectives of an advocate for renters and an attorney with a landlord-tenant practice. In part two, next week, you'll hear about the assistance that's available from your local government, as well as the state's 23 community action organizations. So we'll start with Adrienne Bush. She is Executive Director of the Homeless and Housing Coalition of Kentucky. You can learn more about the organization online at hhck.org. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Adrienne.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So this pandemic has been, and it continues to interfere with the ability of many to keep earning an income and to pay their rent.
And during this outbreak, evictions have been associated with the spread of COVID-19. So national and state bans on evictions have again been extended to the end of this month. First, if you could help us understand the extent of these circumstances here in Kentucky. How many Kentucky rental households are at risk of eviction?
So according to the most recent census household pulse data, this is a survey that's been going on since April that looks at a lot of different things. But the piece that we, of course, are interested in is the housing security piece. And according to the most recent data, which was pulled from November 25th through December 7th, we have a lot of Kentuckians who are at risk of losing their housing to eviction. They report, 44% of Kentucky renters are somewhat to very likely to be evicted over the next couple months. 37% of all renters have slight or no confidence in their ability to pay. And then, of course, looking behind to the prior month, we have 20% of all renters were behind, and that would have been October, November rent. When you disaggregate the data, this is impacting certain groups of people more than others. 58% of all Black Kentucky renters were behind on rent. 37% of Hispanic or Latino renters report the same. So that shows that the problem is widespread. It's not limited to individual decision making. We are looking at a widespread problem that is affecting a lot of Kentuckians.
In terms of who is affected most, Adrian, how does this current economic crisis brought on by the pandemic, how does that differ from the Great Recession?
So the primary difference between the Great Recession and the ongoing COVID-19 economic crisis is that it seems to be affecting low-income service sector employees more. If you look at the public health notices and shutdown orders across the states, the folks who were primarily affected were in the service sector, in retail, in restaurants, that sort of thing. Those are lower income jobs. Therefore, those folks are more likely to be renting as opposed to owning their own home. In contrast, in the Great Recession, much of the employment actually, or the unemployment to be more precise, occurred more in the middle class, white collar jobs. And those folks, if you have a mortgage, typically, you have stronger financial resources in terms of how much equity you have in your home, other informal support networks, family, friends who can help you out for a short period of time. Here, we have folks who were on the brink to begin with. Most likely, their housing was unaffordable pre-pandemic. And so any sort of income reductions, either directly or indirectly attributable to COVID-19, has had a drastic effect.
Well, we've been hearing for years that we as a society are generally a paycheck away from this kind of calamity. And so now here we are.
Yeah. most Americans are, closer to losing their home than they are to, having two or three. And the affordable housing crisis is not just an urban issue. It's not just a coastal issue. We have been experiencing it in Kentucky for quite some time. If you look at, folks who are extremely low income, who are, making less than 30% of the area median income, for a family of four, that's about $24,000. Their housing generally wasn't affordable to begin with. They were paying more than 30% of their income. on their housing costs, on their rent, their utilities. So going into the pandemic, Kentucky was already short about 75,000 affordable homes. So it was already a crisis anyway. And then this has just kind of opened everything up into the perfect storm.
Well, for their part, landlords, especially landlords with only a few properties, small owners, are going through their own crisis. Rental payments dried up. Mortgages and utilities still need to be paid. How do actions being taken by corporate landlords differ from those being taken by ma and pa rental property owners?
So we know nationwide that bigger corporate landlords are driving a significant share of the eviction activity. And it's especially unfortunate because these are the companies who have the greater ability to weather any sort of economic storm. In contrast, you have folks who maybe rent a couple of properties. They may have inherited a house from their parents, or they may live in one half of a duplex. They don't have the resources to go through, you know, months and months without payment. And it is very telling to me that, the economist Mark Zandi has looked at this issue nationwide. There is, as of December, we had $70 billion in unpaid back rent. So if you look at that and then look at, mom and pop landlords, they can't afford that. That's why we really believe that the policy solution that makes the most sense for the way the housing market operates today is broad-based rent relief. A portion of that was included in the last COVID relief package.
Well, human nature being what it is, we're hearing from some who represent landlords that one of the problems that they're having that's really exasperating to them is having to sort out who is genuinely unable to pay because of this situation versus some tenants who are just gaming the situation, knowing that they can't be evicted for non-payment. What's your take on that dilemma?
The folks that we are hearing from anecdotally, who reach out to us in crisis, it genuinely have exhausted every last resource. And it's hard to say, I don't know that I personally can make that determination about every single tenant or renter, whether or not, should they have prioritized their rent or should they have prioritized food? And if they prioritize food, are they gaming the system? I think that's a really tough determination to make. And I also, if you look at the census household pulse data, one of the things it asks is, what did families use in the last 7 days to meet spending needs? Whether it was regular income sources, like pre-pandemic, or was it credit cards or loans, or borrowing from friends and family, or unemployment insurance benefit payments? And so I think without knowing every single person's individual circumstances and support networks and decision-making processes, it is, I personally would hesitate to try to make that distinction.
There is a new study that we just came upon from researchers at Georgia Tech, and it paints a pretty haunting picture of the human impact of evictions and their disproportionate impact on neighborhoods with more low-income households, people of color, households with children. And the research identifies a connection between increasing eviction filings and a rise in reports of child maltreatment. Are you aware of this happening in Kentucky?
I am not specifically aware of any studies that have been done, specific to Kentucky. Those findings from the Georgia Tech study, that doesn't surprise me. If you consider child maltreatment, you know, holistically, that can encompass, you know, people think of abuse, but it also encompasses neglect. And it has, I mean, it's not unheard of for a protection and permanency case within the Department for Community-Based Services to be opened up because a social worker with DCBS doesn't think that the family has adequate housing. Or if a family is in shelter, they're more likely to, you know, have an open case. So we do know from research that's been done over the past 20, 25 years around housing security, that housing insecurity has a terrible impact on children. Just the ability to be stable in a home. If you think about school or education outcomes, it's incredibly hard to learn when you don't know exactly where you're going to be, if you're going to be couch surfing, or if you're literally homeless, especially right now during the pandemic when most Kentucky schools are closed to in-person learning. Eviction is extremely traumatic for children. And if you look at who tends to experience eviction more, you are correct. It is, you know, mostly households headed by women, people of color, Black Kentuckians. It's all just coming to a head at this point.
How would you say the eviction of an individual home, how would that affect the social structure and even the mood of a whole neighborhood?
It's incredibly disruptive because if you look at communities or neighborhoods, if you have people coming in, you know, being there for a while, then suddenly getting evicted, their stuff is out on the street, you know, neighboring folks may think, great, am I next? And then in terms of relationship building, it's hard to, you know, it be in relationship with folks when there's a lot of upheaval. And it also, it's disruptive to the school systems. If there are children in the home, school-age children, then the school has to regroup and figure out where the kids are now. Or, you know, if they end up, you know, couch surfing with another family, then chances are they're doubled up with that other family or individual. And that is usually just a temporary situation. They may be overcrowded. Relationships may go bad. You can't stay there indefinitely. So we know that, you know, particularly in Kentucky, in low-income areas, there is a lot of disruption, upheaval, and it definitely starts to take its toll on the neighborhood or the community over time.
You know, listening, it strikes me that we kind of have a tendency to tiptoe around humiliation, don't we? But man, it is ever present when all your stuff is out on the curb.
Absolutely. And you have no place to put it. If you couldn't afford your rent to begin with, then you probably can't afford a storage unit, especially if you're trying to save up for the next place. And it is a very visceral picture, I guess, of your life just being dumped out by the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. This latest stimulus bill that was enacted by Congress and finally signed extended the federal moratorium on evictions, and Governor Beshear has extended it on the state level until January 31st. And the package also provides more emergency rental assistance, but there's no reason to think that the pandemic is going to suddenly disappear on February 1st. In fact, it's likely to be with us for many, many months to come, and that's going to add up to billions more dollars in back rent owed by tenants who are financially strapped because of the pandemic. What do you foresee happening after this latest extension of the eviction ban expires on February 1st?
Well, there are a couple of actions that can take place in the meantime. You are correct. The latest extension buys a little bit more time. Does it get us through to the end of the pandemic? By no means. But we have signed on to a letter, and many organizations have as well here in Kentucky and across the nation, urging the incoming Biden administration to take action via executive order to strengthen the current CDC eviction moratorium and extend it. And that is how the original CDC moratorium came to be in September, in any case. So we would urge the Biden administration to go ahead. Congress has taken action to get us through another month, but in the meantime, let's go ahead and take executive action and extend this and expand it to really protect more renters. One of our criticisms of the current eviction moratorium is that it only covers evictions for non-payment of rent. And so that leaves a lot of loopholes for other types of court filings and set outs to go through. You know, a landlord may decide to go forward with an eviction because the tenant failed to take their trash cans back to the back to their driveway within 24 hours, or other lease violations like that. That's frustrating because an eviction is an eviction is an eviction. And if the result is still the same, then it really doesn't matter the cause. If the result is folks are doubled up or in their cars or trying to access emergency shelter, it doesn't really matter what the cause of eviction was officially. So we have a limited amount of time. We've got, just under 1 month now, the federal government can take decisive, nationwide, uniform action to try to prevent folks from losing their homes.
You mentioned what you would like to see happen with the incoming administration and the new Congress. I'm wondering about our state legislature. It gets down to business for a 30-day session in early February. Is there any proposed legislation that you are watching, that you're tracking?
We will be looking at any sort of landlord-tenant law proposals and really trying to urge our lawmakers here in Kentucky to do what they can at the state level to strengthen renters' rights and really minimize any sort of punitive landlord-tenant law. A lot of states have adopted the Uniform Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, or URLTA, and Kentucky officially has it on the books, but the way it is written into the statute is that local communities have to opt into it in whole, and that is frustrating because it means, we have a handful of cities and counties in Kentucky who have those protections and responsibilities in place for renters, but the vast majority of Kentuckians do not have those protections. And so that is something that we will be looking for. And then the other thing, too, is just it trying to make sure that any sort of housing legislation that gets proposed, that we look at it through the lens of how does this affect the most vulnerable of our neighbors, and whether or not it actually strengthens or undermines our communities.
Well, Adrienne, we could talk about this for so long because there's so much depth to it, and it's so widely affecting, I guess is the proper way of putting it. But there's one thing I'd like to ask you before we go, and that's that census canvassing was well underway as the pandemic got underway. And I'm just wondering how might this snapshot of us influence policymaking for the coming decade?
That's an excellent question. You know, the fact that we had the census, the decennial census going on in the midst of a pandemic meant that for the first time in a, you know, in my career that I can remember, we had closer to real-time housing security data than I've ever seen before. And so I think it will help definitely advocates, and I hope policymakers make good choices about how do we make sure that all families and households in our communities are secure, that we're not just prioritizing one set of Kentuckians over another. And we're looking at it really, how does, you know, how do these economic factors really impact housing security as opposed to individual decision making or other factors. I do think the census data, especially, you know, looking at how people pay for their housing and, you know, how much of it they have to, how much of their income they have to use in order to stay in a home is very telling. And it definitely points to the need for continued federal investment in housing as a whole and potentially state investment moving in the future.
That's Adrienne Bush. She is Executive Director of the Homeless and Housing Coalition of Kentucky. And again, you can find out more about her organization online at hhck.org. Thanks, Adrienne.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Coming up after the break.
I think it's important for our listeners to understand what the moratorium is.
EKU professor and practicing attorney James Pennington takes us into the fine print of the lease and making rental payments in this pandemic economy. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
WEKU and Eastern Standard are supported in part by contributing listeners and the EKU Chautauqua Lecture Series, now in its 21st year, live streaming on YouTube on select Thursday evenings throughout the academic year, featuring a variety of scholars, critics, scientists, and journalists from across the spectrum, considering the 2020-21 series theme, Dealing with Data. More information at chautauqua.eku.edu on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and at the EKU Partners link at weku.org.
Would you like to listen again to this Eastern Standard or past episodes? Find them online at weku.org or on the WEKU mobile app. Now back to Eastern Standard with Tom Martin.
Earlier in the hour, we heard what renters who have lost jobs during the pandemic are facing as the threat of eviction looms. Governor Beshear has again extended the moratorium on evictions as a means of slowing the spread of COVID-19. But the latest extension expires on January 31st, and it's not clear whether the moratorium will be extended once again, or if not, what will happen when it's lifted. Seemed like a good time to call a lawyer. Joining us now is James Pennington, assistant professor in the Department of Government at EKU. He also is a full equity partner at Bluegrass Law Group in Lexington. The firm has a landlord-tenant practice and is contracted with UK student government to provide legal services for students, mostly landlord-tenant cases. Thanks for joining us, James.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And Professor Pennington, we're focusing on the enormous backlog of unpaid rent due to layoffs and business closures during this pandemic. Tell us what you're seeing. Tell us about your perspective on this.
Well, Tom, first, let me start by saying I think it's important for our listeners to understand what a moratorium is. And to get that definition, I actually went to Black's Law Dictionary,
okay,
a legal dictionary service. So a moratorium is an authorized postponement. So I think it's important for listeners to know that this isn't a cancellation of past due rent. And I think that's one of the biggest myths or misconceptions, you know, with the pandemic and what's going on with the CARES Act and the current legislation we have extending that moratorium. What I'm seeing, or what my firm's seeing more appropriately, is there is a tremendous backlog. Currently in Kentucky, you can't even get into a courthouse for eviction proceedings. They're all done via Zoom remotely currently. And what we anticipate seeing is this backlog to continue. But I think in answering your question, I want to take care of a few other myths.
Okay.
And one being, you know, a lot of clients we have coming in for consultations, both landlords and tenants, because we represent both, is not understanding that individuals can, tenants can still be evicted for other purposes than non-rent, in spite of the moratorium. So, for instance, if your lease has a provision that you can't have pets and you decide you want to get a puppy, you know, your landlord can come in and evict you for that. The CARES Act, the legislation, that's not going to protect you. You know, another iffy area and where we see some confusion is when the lease has expired. So you're in a 12-month lease and it's month 14. At that point, your lease has converted into a month-to-month lease. So your landlord doesn't even have to have a reason. He or she or they are permitted to file an eviction and go forward with that. So I think it's important to understand some of those myths and pull that back.
For sure. If ever there was a time to read that lease, it would be right now.
Oh, absolutely. and I would recommend that even in non-pandemic times.
Of course. Sure. As I understand it, you work with students. And of course, here in Lexington, we have quite a few students, quite a few of them renting. Has this been a difficulty, or have you kind of been saved by the fact that there have been fewer students in town lately?
I think it's a combination of both. With a lot of schools moving, you know, Hardy University included, moving to remote only or significant remote classes, online classes, students haven't been in town. I live in Lexington, and I definitely notice a difference in traffic day to day. So in the aspect of students contacting us on leasing issues related to the pandemic, a lot of it that we're seeing is, you know, I'm just going to make up a professor's name, Professor Smith and Professor Jones moved my classes online, so now I need to get out of my lease, and more breaking leases. And I guess you could attribute that to COVID and to the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of our advice is more guiding students through properly absolving liability for a lease, or making sure they don't have that over their head. Because we have a lot of students that honestly come to us too late. The eviction's already been filed. They may have already been evicted. And it's harder to cure those things on the back end than it is to get ahead of them. So we always advise, and again, you know, I don't want any of the listeners to construe this as legal advice. This is just common sense, me speaking. But talk to your landlord. Keeping that communication is going to be the one thing to assure that you're not evicted, whether it's a COVID-related issue or not. You know, if you can't make rent, talk to your landlord about it.
Maybe you can work out a payment plan, correct?
Exactly. And at the same time, if the landlord is aware that he or she or they are not going to get paid, then that's where some of the available funds come into play for rental assistance. Now, what I want to focus on today is not really talking about the money that's already been spent. It's kind of looking forward to what Governor Beshear released a couple weeks ago as the anticipated $300 million mm-hmm. in rent. That's going to be disbursed in multiple ways. So if you're a landlord, you know, it's better to work with your tenant, work and going through and getting some of these funds and being paid something. Because as the saying goes, a little bit of something is better than a whole lot of nothing.
Very true. What do you hear about any difficulties that students are experiencing when they are evicted?
The biggest difficulty, and, you know, again, for the benefit of all the students that are hopefully listening to us, is a lot of folks think, oh, I'm in month 11 of a 12-month lease. If I get evicted, so what? Well, the so what can come back to bite you, because that eviction is going to stay on your record. It's a court proceeding. So future renters could look at that and not rent to you based off an eviction. It may hurt you when you're trying to buy a home and secure a mortgage. It could come back to bite you when you're applying for a job and a potential employer does a background check. So, you know, the first thing that I'm always conscious of, or my firm's always conscious of, is, hey, you know, there are ramifications. Don't have the ostrich defense where you kind of stick your head in the sand and hope and think it's going to go away, because it's not.
And what are landlords telling you about what they're experiencing as these missed payments pile up? As you pointed out, they do pile up and they're going to have to be paid eventually. But right now, they don't have that flow of income coming in to cover their costs. So what are you hearing from them?
Well, you know, obviously I'm speaking generally because I can't get into, you know, privileged, you know, conversations.
Sure.
But generally, you know, what we're seeing as a trend with our landlords is some of them really have mortgages on their rental properties themselves. So there's a kind of domino effect. If tenants aren't paying landlord, then landlord's not able to pay mortgage. So as you can see, those dominoes start to fall, and it's, you know, creating a dire situation in, you know, in the entire housing or rental market. So that's kind of the fears. Most landlords that we're speaking with are very receptive to looking at, you know, what relief is available, because they want to get something.
Do you think if there is another round of stimulus, and I think there's little doubt that there will be in some form, do you think the federal government should make it possible for banks providing mortgages to rental property owners to reduce or forgive mortgage payments? Of course, a lot of those losses are covered by insurance, but would this protect landlords and homeowners from risk of foreclosure and make it easier for housing providers to in turn forgive rent debt?
What I am seeing, and again, I read all 5,000 plus pages of the, you know, past legislation, obviously, to hopefully some modifications. I haven't. But in reading between the lines and forecasting, you know, unfortunately, there's not looking like there's a lot of relief on the mortgage side of things. And that's unfortunate, because, you know, those folks are facing the same challenges, the same risk of homelessness that people that are renting are. And sometimes in some situations, maybe even more. But the clear language of the current stimulus bill does not have protection for mortgages for homeowners. It's only looking at the rental crisis at this point. Now, that's not to say that there's not other state or federal programs. I encourage anyone that's having trouble to definitely review not only Kentucky's COVID website, but looking at federal resources and seeing what's there. Because one thing to point out, you know, if a student's listening that is going to look to invoke this moratorium or these protections, there's a checklist that you have to go down, and you're answering these questions under the penalty of perjury. Meaning, if you lie, they can put you in jail.
Wow.
And what you are asserting is not only this is my current financial situation, you also have to make a certification that you're trying to get any and all available government resources. So you're having to make that attempt in order to have the protection.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm seeing trend-wise, and you know, when we go to court and, you know, hear stories from other attorneys, see what practitioners are doing, what I'm hearing is that some tenants are going through this certification but aren't checking or are checking the boxes but aren't fulfilling what they said they're going to do, such as not pursuing all those available assistant options.
And you have to document that you did pursue those options?
You do.
Oh, that's important to know. James, as an attorney, when you find yourself representing one side or the other, and I understand that you all represent both sides, tenants and landlords, when you find yourself representing one side or the other in one of these cases, has there been anything in particular that stands out that you believe needs to happen going forward to help both sides get through this crisis?
You know, Tom, if you had asked me that question really before the pandemic, my answer would have been a little bit different. So I'll answer it kind of before pandemic and explain why that's not as relevant now.
Okay.
And then what I hope going forward.
Great.
Kentucky is a place that is a bit odd when it comes to landlord-tenant law. There's a law or a model law called the Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Act, or as we say, the URLTA. And that kind of gives the rules on this is the notice you have to provide with eviction. It kind of sets out the rules. Well, the unfortunate thing in Kentucky is there's only five counties and I want to say about 14 or a handful of cities that have passed this act, meaning the rest of Kentucky kind of, I don't want to say operates in the wild, wild west, but, you know, if I'm in a small county in eastern Kentucky, I can't use my experience with a judge in Fayette County because Fayette County has a universal landlord-tenant act or has adopted it, and most eastern Kentucky counties have not. So there's that navigation in the same rules for everyone.
Is that something that could be remedied in the state legislature?
It certainly is. And, you know, there's been critique of the URLTA that it's kind of swayed in favor of landlords. I don't hold that belief. I think whether it's swayed one side or not, it's just if everyone's playing by the same rules, regardless of where you are located, I think it makes the whole system better. But yes, the legislator could certainly do that. One thing I can say is the CDC and through executive order by Governor Beshear, everyone is kind of operating on the same page. And in practicing, not a lot has changed now with regards to non-URLTA jurisdictions versus ones that have adopted. There's still the 30-day notice requirements. There's still going to be and just to kind of explain the eviction process and how it's kind of symmetrical now, with any eviction now, if it's filed properly, and notice I say filed properly, there's a form that has to be filed basically saying that this eviction isn't covered by the CARES Act or what the future stimulus bill is going to dictate. If you don't check or fill that form out, your eviction isn't even going to move forward. So that's a gatekeeping function. Once you go for that initial court date, if the tenant requests a continuance, it's given without incident. They get a 14-day continuance if they want it. So it is slowing things up, and that's regardless if it deals with payment.
I'm just wondering what you think is going to happen once this latest extension of the federal and the state eviction moratorium expires on January 31st, will it be renewed again, do you think? Does it need to be renewed again? And eventually, it's going to end, and all of this is going to come due.
I mean, the other shoes eventually has to drop. If you're asking me to kind of, you know, read the tea leaves.
Yep, I am.
I do anticipate that President-elect or President Biden, once he takes office, we'll look at whether by executive order or if we, you know, kind of go through a Congress passing another bill. I feel like it's going to be extended. I'm not a doctor or a scientist, but, you know, everything we're seeing is that this new normal is going to continue, despite what we're seeing with vaccines, is going to continue, you know, probably through spring, summer.
I'd say easily with the vaccine situation has become confused. So best estimates I'm hearing is that we're not out of the woods till maybe fall of 21.
And with that estimate, I feel the moratorium is just going to continue to extend.
It's kind of like a big balloon payment for these folks, isn't it?
It is. And one of the things that was a little unclear on the front end of things, and we struggled with this, is, you know, what about late fees? Because you had a period, if it was a CARES Act property, and, you know, without getting too legalese, there's definitions on what makes a property CARES Act, including agreeing to compromise using the forms we discussed. But if the mortgage is a federal mortgage, it's going to qualify as a CARES Act property. On those properties from March through June, you could not collect late fees. Well, that has been changed. And in fact, in Kentucky, one of the initial executive orders tried to keep that in place, but Governor Beshear amended that. So not only do you have this balloon that's continuing to increase, you've got late fees that are being tacked on, permitted legally. You know, when the other shoe drops, whether it's January 31st, July 31st, or December 31st, you know, we're going to be looking at another bad situation.
I guess at that stage, given the enormity of that, about the only entity that could step in and rescue us from some sort of economic calamity would be the federal government.
You are correct. You know, as they have on two occasions. So mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of our listeners are probably eager and hoping that there's another future, you know, stimulus bill on the horizon. I anticipate there being. Now, will it be direct payments? I don't know. I doubt it. But even if it's targeted and maybe looking at giving some relief to, you know, folks with mortgages and homeowners, and that may have to be a modification, but it's a very, and again, I'll note that, you know, my firm does a lot of work on it. I kind of do a lot or a little from the sidelines, as, you know, teaching is my full, you know, responsibility, but, you know, with being a full equity partner and knowing what goes on in the firm, I hear the, mm-hmm. I hear the grumblings of my two partners, mm-hmm. and definitely of what clients are having to struggle and navigate through.
Right. Well, James, I think you're right. I think this is going to be with us for a while. And if I may, I'd like to come back and check with you a couple months down the road and see where things stand.
I would absolutely. I mean, any information I can get to students or anyone listening is, you know, knowledge is power. So I hope something I've said, it will help someone along the way. I guess the last thing I will leave, again, you know, I don't want anything I've said to be construed as giving legal advice. I do firmly advise anyone going through struggles with rent or the eviction process, seek out an attorney. Most attorneys are going to do free consultations. You could also look at doing, you know, legal aid of the Bluegrass and some income-based services. Mm-hmm. The Kentucky Bar Association even pushed out, which we all went through it anyway, some training for attorneys that they could offer some pro bono eviction litigation services or representation services. But the last thing that I would say for anyone listening is don't dodge it and think it's going to go away.
It's James Pennington, assistant professor in the Department of Government at EKU and also a full equity partner at Bluegrass Law Group in Lexington. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
also checked in with the Central Kentucky Landlord Association and its president, Fred Schaefer.
It's always in the landlord's interest to work with tenants. We're not mean-spirited people. We try to work with them. It's in our best interest, when, like I say, with the cost of a turnover. It's what's in people's hearts. If you're trying to game the system, then we're ready to, you know, it's landlord's best interest. If a tenant can work out a plan and stick to it, that's always better than an empty unit.
And Schaefer echoes and emphasizes what we heard from Attorney James Pennington earlier in the segment.
If you're a tenant that's behind on your rent, to talk to your landlord and work out a plan that you can stick to. If you've got multiple evictions, you're going to have a hard time finding a nice place to live. So, you know, talk to your landlord and work something out. And if any landlord would like more information about our group, they can go to our website, which is centralkylandlords.com.
Next week, part two of this two-part Eastern Standard series on rental housing and the pandemic moratorium on evictions. We talk with Tyler Scott, Chief of Staff in the Office of Lexington Mayor Linda Gorton.
We wanted to make sure the assistance we were getting was going directly to the renters by way of providing the rental fee to the landlord.
And Lexington Social Services Commissioner Chris Ford.
We've assisted in the neighborhood now of just over 500 households with rental assistance, and that represents a small portion of those that may be of need.
We'll hear from Karen Atkins of Kentucky River Foothills Development Council, one of the state's 23 community action councils, about CARES Act money that they can provide.
Since the pandemic began, Foothills has seen a significant increase in the number of individuals and families that request our services, many of which who have never have been in a position to ask for assistance, mainly due to lost wages.
All on next week's edition of Eastern Standard, as we bring you part two of our series on a perilous situation in Kentucky rental housing as the pandemic wears on. That wraps this week's edition. Eastern Standard is produced at the studios of Dynamics Productions with the support of the Foundation for Appalachian Kentucky, an accredited community foundation, and their Appalachian Impact Fund. Our executive producer is Mike Savage. Neil Kesterson is our producing engineer and audio editor. You can listen to editions of Eastern Standard on air, online, and on mobile at weku.org or esweku.org, on the WEKU mobile app, or as a podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Want to suggest an interview? You can email us at es@eku.edu. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.